Welcome to Hero Hype, episode 23. As always, we are coming to you with all of the latest and greatest superhero news, history on characters that you need to know about, and comic book recommendations. This week, we have a super special guest with us, but I'm here again. I'm Danya. I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin.
Hello.
And our super special guest this week is Danielle.
I'm so excited to have been called super special. That makes me so happy.
Yay!
Yeah, Danielle's been on a couple of episodes with us before. You'll probably recognize her from the Indie PopCon episode as well, because that one was super fun.
Yes, it was. I think that was my last one, so I'm so happy to be back.
Yes. Yeah, God, that feels like so long ago, doesn't it?
Unfortunately, yes. It was so long ago.
I know. But hey, you're back and we've got lots to talk about. So, guys, if you ever want to get hold of us or talk to us or whatever, you can always do so via the comments when this episode goes up on hypeable.com. You can chat to us via Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. You can always email us as well, which is herohypepodcast@gmail.com, and we're always happy to chat to you all. It's always good fun. And, right, let's get right down to it, because a lot of trailers came out, and we have a lot of feelings. More feelings than the last episode.
You wouldn't think it was possible,
you
but
wouldn't
we do.
Yeah, that steamroller of emotion, it's like a wrecking
ball. It's gonna get steamrollered.
Yeah. Right, so we're going to start off with a brief history, and this week we have a brief history of Lash. So, Lash was born in the secluded inhuman city of Arolin, Greenland. He was one of the few chosen during his generation to go through Terra Genesis, though Lash didn't believe that every inhuman deserved the honor of it. So when a Terrigen bomb was detonated above New York, awakening the powers of dormant inhumans, Lash left on a mission to discover those affected and pass judgment on which of them were worthy of their new powers. Lash discovered a few inhumans he deemed worthy and attempted to recruit them to his cause of ensuring inhuman supremacy. A group of inhumans opposed to Lash tracked him down, and a battle broke out between them and Lash's recruits. Lash was eventually incapacitated by Gorgon, and Queen Medusa apprehended him. Medusa and the new Inhumans eventually left Arolin, and Lash was warned not to cross paths with them, though Lash later assembled another group to his cause called the Tribe, and continues on his mission to police those worthy of their powers. So, why did we decide to bring you a brief history of Lash? Well, that's because in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. trailer, we got our first look at Lash right at the end, and he looked pretty menacing, all things considered. What did you guys think?
For being in shadows.
Yeah, for being in shadows, you know, creepy, super creepy. What did you guys think of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. trailer?
I liked
besides
it.
The obnoxious voiceover.
Yes, except for the ABC guy, which we were talking before because I had to rewatch it, and I didn't notice it the first time, I don't think, but that guy's got to go.
Sorry, we need you out of a job, ABC voiceover guy. It's just super
distracting.
You
need a better voice.
Yeah, it's just super distracting when you're trying to, like, pay attention to all of the awesome happening and all of the, like, trying to pick out all of the different little bits that might give you a clue to the new season and what's going on and what all your favorite characters are up to, and you've just got a guy over the top going, "In a world of danger, my voice is going to narrate every single second, and all you'll be able to think about is this." And it's like, shut up and let me look at Coulson and Sky and everyone, and just
so in contrast to the CW ones that don't have narration at all, they just let the dialogue do the narrating, which works a lot better.
For me, it works a lot better. I don't know if there's anyone out there who likes the voiceover thing. I think it edges into being a little bit too cheesy for me. But, you know, the actual content that we got for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when you ignore the voiceover was really cool.
Oh, I agree. I think out of the three trailers that we're going to talk about today, that I actually enjoyed the S.H.I.E.L.D. one the most, maybe just aesthetically, just like looking at it. There were so many things happening, and I thought it was well done, minus the voiceover.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought it was the least interesting of the three. I thought there was so little happening that it just sort of felt like, oh, look, we're doing stuff that we pretty much always did anyway, and now we're just shifting our focus a little bit. But it felt very much a lot of the same old, same old. So I thought it was pretty vague and uninteresting.
I mean, it didn't really tell us too much more than we'd already been told, like, through the Comic-Con panels and some other stuff, but it was nice to see a lot of it visualized. But I am with Caitlin in this one. Of the three trailers that we got, I think the S.H.I.E.L.D. one made me least excited, and potentially because I knew the most about it. So we got so much information about S.H.I.E.L.D. and the direction they were going in, potentially, that a lot of it was just putting pictures to the words, I guess. So for me, it was a little bit like, I kind of wanted something new. I think the thing I was most excited about was the little brief glimpse at Lash. I think that was the thing that got me most excited.
That was the newest thing.
Yeah.
Everything else seemed kind of been there, done that. And that's like, oh, new villain. Okay. But I think it doesn't help that it was only 30 seconds and the other ones were like a minute and a half, 2 minutes long. So
Yeah, you can definitely pack in a lot more. But the one thing that I will say for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. right now that has gotten me even more excited is all of the like promo images. Like some of them look really, really, really good. Oh, so good. I'm liking the new looks at like Constance Zimmer's character. She's got some really fabulous bangs going on. and for Danielle, we did get Ward in some of the promo images, whereas he wasn't in the trailer.
Yes. Okay. So I think that's why I did not hear the voiceover the first time, is because I was trying to take in all of the things that were going on in the trailer, because it was so short, because there was a bunch of stuff going on. And I kept looking for Ward because they've been kind of bringing him out at all of these conventions and talking to him about like the new direction of Hydra or what's going to happen. I feel like he's been, aside from Chloe Bennett, Brett Dalton has been one of the most vocal people about the next season of the show. And yet again, he's nowhere to be seen. And that was probably one of my biggest problems with season two, which I know I'm in the large minority of that. But it was just, I feel like he's always getting sidelined and then they only bring him in when it's convenient. Although I was really happy to see his character poster and I did really like those character posters. It was just a shame that he wasn't in the trailer.
I think the character posters are fantastic, and it really, really...
Oh, they're so good.
They're so good, because it really sets up, like, what side is everyone on? Are we supposed to, like, think that some of them are going to be, you know, slipping more towards the dark side? Like, there's a really interesting division of the characters in terms of where they're standing, where the light is falling. You know, you could probably theorize for forever and a day about these cast photos. But can I just say, like, I'm gonna have my shallow 2 seconds because I need them every now and again, but hot damn Agent Coulson, good grief.
Yes, and without the suit. I didn't think that I would like him without the suit, but I think he looks better.
Yeah. There's something about, like
a lot better.
There's something about Field Agent Coulson that's, like, getting me a little bit hot under the collar. It's like, whew. I like an older man. What can I say? Yeah.
Well, Fitz looked pretty good, too, in his suit.
Yeah. No, I do like, oh, yeah, Fitz's suit is pretty awesome. But, you know, they're all looking pretty damn cool. And it's really interesting to see, like, Fitz in a lighter color and then Simmons, like, contrasting that by being in a really dark color. And just, It's just so interesting. Like, do you have any theories about where on the spectrum people are going to start lying in terms of, like, loyalties and who's going to team up and who might not, just based on, like, the posters and stuff? Do you think that's really telling, or do you think that's just they needed to fit in so many characters in the poster they all had to stand somewhere?
I mean, what catches my eye is that Bobby has a blue shirt on that's kind of bright, and everyone else is sort of blandly colored, and I don't know what that means. We know that she is going off to at least do the pilot for the spinoff, but I was like, why is her color of shirt standing out? Like, why isn't she in, like, a gray shirt or something that's blending in the way everyone else kind of is?
She didn't get the S.H.I.E.L.D. memo.
Apparently not.
Oh, no, it's true that it's kind of, maybe it brings out her eyes. Maybe she's like, blue is my color. I wanted to wear blue. And Coulson will be like, I said monochrome. We're going for gritty and realistic this season. And she's like, no, I'm not having that.
Just out off to my own show then.
Yeah. It's like, see you losers. Lol, bye. We get to see Coulson's hand as well, and he's kind of looking a bit grim about it, if I'm completely honest as well. So maybe he's not too impressed about the fact that he's gone all Luke Skywalker on this and has what is presumably a mechanical hand. Do you think Tony Stark would have had anything to do with that?
Maybe, but just not told who it's for. But to be honest, I completely forgot that he didn't have a hand. I was like, wait, what's going on? Why is everybody obsessing about his hand and his glove?
Yeah, yeah.
Good job, me.
He's starting a new fashion trend, Danielle. He just wants to wear one glove all the time.
It's the Michael Jackson.
He's bringing it back.
Well, I think his hand can go be friends with Bucky's arm.
Oh, Bucky. Why would you? Gosh. Now that'll be an interesting, yeah, that'll be an interesting parallel, actually, is kind of the technologies between the two arms and, I guess, Bucky's kind of feelings of, I guess, him versus Hydra and being controlled, and then Coulson and his new mechanical hand and whether that makes him more or less human, because they've said that a big theme of this season is going to be what makes you inhuman. So does the fact that he is not fully himself anymore make him more or less human and that sort of thing? It would be an interesting path for them to go down. But let's move on to some of the other trailers, because we have a lot of feelings about some of them.
So we have the one that premiered a couple hours after we recorded our last episode.
Because of course it did. We knew it was happening, though. We knew it was happening, but this host needed to have a thing called sleep, so she couldn't really stay up until after it premiered in order to talk about it on the same day. So sorry for the delayed reaction, guys. You can all blame me.
Time zones. But we got to see what season 4 of Arrow is going to look like. And I'm just going to take a moment to brag that I was totally right about why Starling City becomes Star City. It's totally in honor of Rey. And that was my theory. So,
woo!
Go me. That and Sarah were my takeaways from the trailer. Obviously, I have my priorities, but... We have some interesting looks at the season, especially some footage of Damian Dark. He's not going to be hiding. He's right out front.
Which is good. Like, I like seeing a villain who is willing and able to do his own dirty work. I like that he seems to be front and center, and he's not going to be, like, pushing it off onto other people. He's, like... not hiding. He's definitely not hiding in any shadows here. He's like, I'm gonna take charge and I'm gonna kick ass, basically. And I think that's pretty terrifying, honestly, because his face is creeping me out as well. It's like he's kind of creeping up on everyone, and it's like, please don't make Oliver go broody again. We're just getting some smiles.
See, I'm just going to be laughing all season because one of the Howling Commandos is now Damien Dark.
Oh, I know, but you know, there's only a limited amount of jobs. There's got to be some crossover somewhere. But it is quite funny that we're seeing a Marvel alum come across to a DC property. But, you know, he's a really good actor, so I'm super excited to see his take on a villain.
I agree. And to go off of what you were saying previously, I like that he's front and center because with an actor like this, and with a character who kind of is at the forefront of everything, I feel like I like those better because you get more of a sense of where they're coming from, how their mindset is, and it makes the whole season or just the whole storyline that much richer. Like, for instance, I loved what Daredevil did with Kingpin. Like, they made him so empathetic and so, because he was so entrenched in everything, and I really like that. So I'm kind of hoping for maybe not the same level, but just to have him forefront and kind of digging into him a little bit.
Yeah, because I loved Kingpin in Daredevil. I think that's probably one of the more interesting villains that they've done recently in superhero TV. Like, he was just so great. And I don't necessarily need to be swayed to their side to enjoy them as a character. I could think they're completely reprehensible and that I'm not on their side at all, and I think what they're doing is, like, abhorrent and really terrible. But it's all on how they play that off. Like, I don't know. I don't need to feel sympathetic towards their cause all the time, but that really worked for Kingpin. But I kind of really want to see a character, like a villain character, really push the limits of what's acceptable and really go to, like, the limits of what is acceptable, that you can potentially feel any kind of sympathy for them as a character. Like, I think with Damien Dark we might get it, because everyone's been terrified of him. And, you know, Ra's al Ghul was scared of him in his own way, you know? So, yeah, he's gonna be a really interesting villain. I can't wait to see what he gets up to.
And he's the one in charge of the organization that had Diggle's brother assassinated. Yes. So Diggle should have a nice juicy arc this season with all of that stuff going on. Plus, his and Oliver's bromance is all wrecked at the beginning of the season.
Oh, man.
Which is sad.
Can I just say the little bit at the end of one of the trailers where Diggle's like, "You took a shot for me." And Oliver just goes, "Ugh." Killed me. I was in tears of laughter. Like, it was just like the timing on that was perfect. Like, just no words right. Like, the I've rewatched this trailer so many times. It's been on repeat over and over and over and over again. It's kind of turned into, like, Schrodinger's trailer for me, where, like, the world may or may not end if I turn this trailer off.
Especially the part with Constantine, right?
Oh, don't even get me started. That smug little grin and the cigarette. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. I'm so excited to see him come back, because they've done a couple of interviews now since the trailer came out talking about Constantine's role in particular. And the thing is that even though he's only going to be in one episode, they're really talking about, like, how well he fits into the mythology and how well he fits into the show and how the episode feels really organic with his inclusion and how excited they were to have him as part of the show and as part of their universe. And, like, the way they've been talking is, like, really encouraging that if it fits, they will probably bring him back again. So I'm going to keep holding out my hope that Constantine is just going to keep popping up and being a jerk. And yeah, I'm really excited to see how he interacts with Oliver. Like, really excited. Because Constantine is really smug and really sarcastic and can sometimes be a little bit holier than thou. And Oliver is so sometimes deadpan and serious. It's just going to be so interesting to see them play off each other that I'm just going to probably want more of it, though. I'm going to not get enough of it, I think, when he does come on.
Aww. And then he's coming back for Sarah, and we saw Sarah for like a brief bit, but we see her coming out of the Lazarus pit, and I'm so excited. Yay! Because my girl is alive.
Yes, but the consequences of her coming back is going to be something I'm going to be really interested to see, because they keep hyping that up a little bit as well, and it'd be quite interesting to see if Thea starts slipping a little bit as well, because they did talk about the consequences of being brought back, but there weren't too many hinted with Thea in the last season after she was brought back. So it would be interesting. It would be interesting to see if she starts slipping in this season a little bit, in and out of, you know, maybe a slightly darker place, or things start going a little bit strange with her. And obviously we'll see a lot more of Sarah in Legends of Tomorrow, but I'm really interested, because they hyped up the consequences of being brought back from the dead. And
she's got a few moments in the trailer where she looks like she's a little crazy or about to kill someone, and Oliver has to stop her. So that seems to indicate they're going to be playing with that.
I hope so, because I was waiting for it towards the end of last season, and it just kind of seemed like a non-issue, like they just kind of brushed over it, even though they had built it up. So I am looking forward to hopefully that happening.
Yeah, same.
And they also said that Sarah's stuff coming back is going to be really big for Laurel, and apparently Laurel is really a big player in getting her brought back. So they said that the episode she comes back in is some of the heaviest stuff they've given to Laurel, which, considering her, that she's had an addiction storyline, like, I don't know how you get much darker than that, but they're saying that it's going to be pretty heavy for her. So I'm interested to see what they're doing with Laurel too, now that she's the full-fledged Black Canary.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me too. Jinx.
She did a really interesting interview at Dragon Con about Laurel recently, and she was talking about how she finds it really refreshing that Laurel does not and still isn't going to have a romantic relationship storyline in this season. She's still going to be focusing solely on herself, on taking up the mantle of the Black Canary, on honing and training herself to be like the best hero that she possibly can be, and dealing with stuff like Sarah coming back and all of the stuff that comes along with that. So I am actually really heartened to see a female character who's going to be like standing alone, just figuring herself out, because she's been through a lot. I mean, she lost Tommy. She went through everything where she thought she'd lost Sarah previously. Then Oliver came back, and then Sarah came back, and she's had like emotional whiplash all over the place. And I haven't always enjoyed her acting ability. I think it's mostly been the actress's portrayal of the character more than the character herself. It hasn't always landed for me, but I think particularly over the last season, especially the latter half of last season, she started to really improve for me. So I'm really hoping that some of this stuff going forward into the next season is just going to keep improving on the character for me, because I really would like her to kind of become one of my lady favorites. Because we need more of those.
Yeah, that would be so nice. I completely agree with what you were just saying. And also, I think I really like the fact that they're saying that it's Laurel who's the one who's pushing for bringing Sarah back and kind of being the agent, because she's always been, like, she's always had things happening to her rather than being her own agent. So I'm interested to see how that kind of plays out and see her grow in that way as well. Like, yes, it's going to be dark. Yes, it's going to be sad, but it's something that she is actively pursuing rather than kind of dealing with.
Yeah, seeing Laurel active instead of reactive is going to be a big
change of pace.
And hopefully we see it, because, yeah, she, that poor woman has been through so much.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah.
I'm not sure that I probably would have been able to deal with it much better than she did. Like, if you stop and you go back and you think about it, like, some of the stuff that happened to her is so beyond my scope of being able to deal that I'm not even sure I would have been able to drag myself back to my feet as well as she did and as quickly as she did. So, you know, you've got to give her that kudos, at least. And, you know, I've not always been her biggest supporter. And going back and rewatching season 1, season 2, season 3, which I did quite recently, it really, really, really helps with showing her full arc of redemption, where she goes from her, like, substance abuse storyline through into season 3 and kind of coming up and taking on the mantle of the Black Canary. And I remember being on this podcast saying that I was very, very dubious about whether she was ready to take up the mantle, whether I thought it was the right thing in her story to be able to, like, move it along, and whether I thought it was the best choice that they could have gone with. And you know what? I think it was for her character. They didn't make her immediately amazing, which I think helped, that she had to struggle through and will still keep struggling through having to train to keep herself on the same level as Oliver and as Diggle and as Thea, who have more training. So, yeah, I'm kind of happy with the direction that she's moving in. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of her.
So this is the pro-Laurel podcast today.
At the moment, it all depends, because it's Katie Cassidy, right, is the name of the actress.
Yes.
Yeah, that is right. Because
yes.
Sometimes I'll get Katie and Katie lots. Like, I'll start saying one of their names and then I'll move to the other and be like, no, that's the wrong one.
Wrong Lance sister.
But sometimes I'm just... her acting, sometimes it falls a little flat for me. And I think sometimes that's where I end up getting frustrated with Laurel, not because of the character specifically, but because sometimes the material that she's given doesn't land the right way for me. And I end up getting frustrated and take my frustration out by being like, oh, this character sucks, what the hell is going on? I think she's starting to find her feet a little bit more, though, because I would sometimes fall into the category of I found her acting a little bit wooden at times, especially compared to some of the other characters and actors that and actresses that she was opposite. But I think she's vastly improved. I think season 3 in particular was a massive turning point, both for the character and for the actress. Like, I've been a lot happier with how she's delivered some of her scenes more recently. I don't know if you guys found the same thing or if I was alone in that.
Yes and no. I think I may have had more problems with the characterization rather than the actress herself. Perhaps it's because I'm used to the actress because I've seen her on multiple CW shows. So I'm kind of like immune to it. I don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't really bothered, but I do think that maybe she wasn't getting the best material at first to work with because she kind of was shoved to the background a bit at first and they focused on a lot of other things and it took a while for her to get good material she could sink her teeth into.
Yeah, no, I can see that as well. But she's getting some really good stuff now, which I think is just better for the character and better for the actress. So I'm just hoping that they continue to improve on that, because I think it's a character that they could do a lot with. I mean, Black Canary has such amazing mythology to take from in the comics that, you know, there's so much there that they could do with her. And yeah, there's so much potential, and I'm just hoping that she lives up to it through season 4.
Agreed. I guess the last thing to talk about for the Arrow trailer is the Felicity factor. We find out that Oliver and Felicity have been off traveling and they have a house and are living a carefree life when Laurel and Thea come and ask for help. So it looks like those two will be a established couple, at least as the season picks up. So what are we thinking about Felicity in season four?
I'm happy about it. Like, I am happy to see them together as a couple and from what I'm assuming actually functioning as a couple, if they have a house together and are traveling together. But for some reason, and I can't exactly put my finger on it, but I thought that those scenes in the beginning where they're living the suburban life, that was just, I was not excited to see those, or they just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. It wasn't my favorite part of the trailer.
I kind of enjoyed it. I kind of liked seeing Oliver and Felicity being happy, because the thing with Oliver is that he hasn't really had the chance to be normal. He hasn't had a break from anything. He hasn't had the chance or the opportunity to really process or digest anything that's happened to him, really, over the last, what would you say? I mean, it was... was it five years he was away for? And then however long has then passed since he's come back? Because sometimes it's really difficult to keep track of the actual passage of time. But, you know, if you think about it, he's been thrown from one extreme situation to the next. He's had so much on his shoulders. And admittedly, he hasn't always dealt with everything in the best possible way. He's made mistakes. He's deeply flawed. He can sometimes be a slightly problematic character, but he does what he thinks is best. So I'm kind of really excited to see him finally take some time with the woman that he loves in order to properly digest everything that's happened to him and not have the entire weight of the world on his shoulders, even if it's just a very short amount of time, because we know it's going to be short-lived. We know he's going to get straight back into the thick of it when Thea and Laurel come and are like, we need your help, we need you back. And there was never any doubt that he was going to get back into the superhero game or the vigilante game. But I think it's just, it's a nice break for him. And it's not, I've seen a couple of people comment that it's very irresponsible for him to have like gone off and left the city. But it's not as though he left it without anyone to protect it or keep upholding the values and the things that he's really put into place since he became the Arrow. Like, they still had Laurel and Thea and Diggle. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's an interesting place for them to have taken the character. And I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more of it and maybe a slightly softer Oliver when the season comes back.
Yeah, I think it ties into the fact that they're essentially transitioning into him being the Green Arrow. Like, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the first episode is titled Green Arrow. So he's literally going to become the Green Arrow this season. And that's comes with a bit of a lighter air. So Oliver himself needs to be a bit lighter than he's been. And probably the only way for him to get to that place in an organic way is to just have that vacation away from everything with somebody he loves and having that
vacation
breather.
Vacation all Now I just want him in like shades and like a Hawaiian shirt and really terrible like cut off shorts and like sandals with socks and just walking around looking really terrible. Vacation Oliver. God. Someone draw that. Please, someone draw that. I don't even care if it's like the worst crayon drawing that you've ever done. I want Vacation Oliver.
Extra sunscreen on his nose, please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But hopefully him being a little lighter now will mean that Felicity can stop crying every time he's around. So that'll be good, because Felicity needs to stop crying all the time.
Preach. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have absolutely zero problems with my female characters getting emotional and having emotional breakdowns and crying.
Of course.
I have absolutely no problem with that. Because sometimes your emotions get overwhelming, whether you are male or female. Sometimes that stuff is just going to keep building on top of you, and the only way to deal with it is just to let it all out. But just anything that happened last season, and she was in tears, and it was just kind of, it got to the point of grating rather than it actually being what felt like a genuine emotional reaction from her. Like, it was just like, oh, something's happened, let's just make Felicity cry to transition this scene. And it's like,
well, and it was also like they were trying to build one trauma on top of another, so she was reacting to one thing and they're like, no, let's make it worse, and then she reacts to that and it's like, no, we're gonna make it worse again.
Yeah.
So she just never had a chance to like process. It was like sobbing and then no, but it gets worse. It's like, I just want my earlier Arrow Felicity back.
Which we might do. And this time she's back with a machine gun.
I know! That's amazing. I love her so much.
Yeah. So good. Oh my gosh, so good.
And kicking someone's favorite from Teen Wolf in the nuts. So...
I do like a little bit of J.R. Bourne. Like, seriously, there are some really nice older men coming in on these shows. I'm here for it.
And on that note, let's move on to the Flash, because we got a Flash trailer too. So we got some amazing looks at the beginning of season two of the Flash. We're picking up several months after the end of season one. So clearly Barry saves everybody and now they're celebrating him. But obviously that's not going to go well because they opened up pathways to other worlds. And we get to see Jay Garrick for the first time and he tells them that their world is in danger. And who is he in danger from? Zoom. Dun, dun, dun. So what do we think?
I thought it was really well done. This one and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. were tops for me. I really liked just the atmosphere that they gave, and I really liked how they brought all of the new characters into the fold without it being like, oh, hey, here's a new character. It kind of felt really natural and organic the way that they fit them into the trailer for me.
I agree with that. I think it was a really gentle way of introducing everyone without it feeling overwhelming. And, you know, it had some really great flashes of stuff. Cisco had some brilliant lines, as always, because of course he does. Cisco always has the best lines. Yeah. Yeah, but it also, it set up the new season in a really good way to be like, you know, there are massive consequences to this portal having opened up, and Jay Garrick being almost the vehicle to be like, this is a big deal. You don't understand what this guy is capable of. Like, I think it was really, really, like a really nice touch and kind of really sets him up as... I guess the person with slightly more knowledge, both about the powers, what Zoom is capable of, and I guess in his ability to be able to guide Barry through the next season, because, you know, Barry is mostly working out, or has up until this point, been working out his powers on his own through a series of trial and error and just whatever scientific knowledge he and the rest of his team have been able to back it up with. But now he's going to have someone there to help him out a little bit. And kind of, I'm really looking forward to it. And it was really nice to see Iris with like some words of encouragement as well. And yeah, there were just some really nice glimpses at characters new and returning that, yeah, I'm really excited to see them all playing together in this giant sandbox of crazy wormhole.
I'm really excited about the way they've been talking about Jay Garrick. They had kind of a rundown of some of the new characters, and they were saying that Jay Garrick is coming in. He's going to be this world-weary guy who's been doing the superhero thing a lot longer than Barry. So, you know, he's serving as Barry's mentor in that way, but he thinks Barry's kind of naive about how everything works, but Barry's so pure of heart, essentially, that he's going to learn about being a good person from Barry. So they're going to have a interesting dynamic that I'm looking forward to seeing play out.
That is really nice, actually, that it's going to go both ways. Because the thing with Barry is that he's so hopeful, he's so optimistic, that sometimes it blinds him in regard to certain people and certain situations around him, because he's always going to assume the best, and sometimes that can put him in a worse situation. So having him understand the gravity of certain situations a little bit more is only going to improve him as a character. But then him teaching Jay Garrick to lighten up a little bit and believe in the best of people sometimes, that's also going to be a good thing for that character, so that they can both affect their character growth in interesting ways. That's how a mentor and, was it, would you say mentee role? would work best for me. Like, I just like that it's gonna be reciprocal, like they're both gonna learn from each other, which is nice.
I think it'll make for, like you were saying, like a much stronger story. Again, when you bring in these other characters and give them more meat rather than putting him into one role, like a villain or like a mentor, if you actually give them more, I think it just makes everything more interesting. So I'm excited for this as well.
And in the trailer, we also got a look at Barry's new love interest, Patty Spivot. She's going to be joining Joe's anti-metahuman task force that he's got going on. And apparently she has some reasons in her past for why she wants to fight metahumans. And she's also a science nerd, so she and Barry are going to bond over that. But she's also good in a tight spot. And we got a brief introduction to her in the trailer, too. So Iris is going to be grieving Eddie, so no time for romance with Iris. So Barry gets a different love interest this season.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I like the idea of Barry and Iris eventually being together. I mean, they saw the flashes of that newspaper that kind of set it up to be an inevitability if the trajectory of that world continues the way that it should be and hasn't been completely disrupted by, you know, them ripping that wormhole open. But I kind of like that Iris is going to take some time for herself to get over Eddie, because that was a huge relationship for her. And it's not easy to get over the death of someone you were that close to. And for her to have jumped straight back into a relationship, I think wouldn't have been much of a credit to the writers or to either Barry or Iris. So I like that she's going to be taking some time for herself to grieve, to kind of find her footing again. But I also like that Barry isn't going to be putting expectations upon her, thinking that he's waiting around or he's like pressuring her into anything, that he's just letting things happen to him, and if he ends up in another relationship, he ends up in another relationship. Like, I like that it's going in that direction rather than that whole, well, I'll wait for you kind of thing, which can sometimes come off slightly creepy for me. Because it's kind of like, well, what if I'm never ready? Are you just going to put your whole life on stop because you expect me to eventually want you? Just because a newspaper headline said so? Like, I just like that they're both taking time to, like, live and grow on their own, but still remaining good friends from what we could see in the trailer.
Yeah, the newspaper belonging to the crazy person.
Yeah, but still, you could see Barry getting his hopes.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be hard not to, but I agree. I like that there's no expectations there. And I really like what we saw of her, just a very quick glimpse. She seemed kind of like a Spitfire to me. I guess that's the best word that I could use to describe her. So I'm interested to see more of her.
Hopefully she gets better treatment than Linda Park did, because that did not go particularly well last season. That was kind of a low point of the season for me. So, any other feelings about the Flash trailer?
I think we got through a lot of them. Okay. We did remarkably well with the very few tears ourselves.
So our last piece of DC TV news is that we got a first look photo from Legends of Tomorrow of Hawkman and Hawkgirl. And Dawn, you had a great pun.
I did have a great pun. I did. I put it all over the Twitter account because they're two Hawk. Hawk damn. I'm going to keep using it for forever because holy crap, they did look really Hawk and hot. No, they look fantastic. I saw this and immediately I was like, I knew Caitlin would have already seen it because Caitlin's already seen everything whenever I go to talk to her about it. But I was like sending her links and I'm like, look how awesome they look. Look how amazing they are. I actually think my first thing was that pun, though. I'm pretty sure that was the first thing I said to you.
That's pretty quality when that's your first thought. I'm impressed by your punning prowess.
Yeah, it's a thing. I've had practice with my Hawk puns because Hawkeye.
But yeah, they look pretty damn good, don't they?
I'm super excited to see them in action because we've gotten like little glimpses from like interviews and the executive producers talking about what the characters are going to be up to. But it's nice just seeing them side by side and just how well the costumes fit into that world without being too cartoonish and too impractical. Like, they just look so cool. I think it may be one of my favorite costumes that they've done for both of them.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how they were going to translate that because my main knowledge of them comes from Justice League, the cartoon, and the costumes in the cartoon are not something you would expect to see in live action. So I was wondering how they were going to translate it, and I was so impressed.
I want to see them in action. I'm not a huge DC person. I think I've seen glimpses of Hawkman and Hawkgirl before. But I think they look okay. Like, I know everybody was super excited about it, but I think they look fine. So I think once I see them in action, I will have more of a response to them.
I'm sure it won't be too long before that happens because they're going to be, Legends of Tomorrow is going to be at New York Comic Con. I think they keep saying that there's going to be previews at New York Comic Con. I'm pretty sure I got a press release at one point about it. So
so you're going to take videos and send them to me, basically.
Do I want to get kicked out of New York Comic Con completely?
Maybe for me, you would do that.
But I almost guaranteed someone will manage to leak footage online at some point, or they'll release it around New York Comic Con, which isn't that far away. It's beginning of October, so it's coming up pretty fast. So I imagine we'll start seeing a lot of the characters in action after that point, or around that point. So, last little bit of TV news, which isn't necessarily TV news, I guess. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter's Dub Smash War is still kind of carrying on and going forward. I legitimately have no words for how this keeps escalating. So, we talked a little bit about Agent Carter's on the last episode. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. came back and did their round one video, which was all of them on wrecking balls and swinging back and forth, and Patton Oswalt was there, and I was just like, how are Agent Carter ever going to top that? Because I kind of thought that's it, that's probably the winning video. I'm not sure how even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be able to top that themselves. And then Agent Carter came back with Stan Lee sitting in Lola while James Darcy was all dressed up in a blonde wig and short shorts washing the car. They touched Lola. They touched Lola all over while singing Lola. It just... I think I've stopped being able to can because it just, I don't know what Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are going to do next. How do you top Stan Lee and desecrating Lola? How? What are they going to do?
I don't know. I really love the Wrecking Ball one by Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And usually I'm a Team Agent Carter person, at least when they first did it around San Diego Comic-Con. I wasn't actually a huge fan of their single ladies one. Everybody was, but I was just kind of nonplussed by it. And I have a confession. I didn't really realize that that was Lola, the car, when I saw it. Oh, I know. I don't understand. I think I was just kind of staring at Stan Lee. And I didn't notice it was Lola until everybody was like, it was Lola, which makes complete sense. And I'm an idiot. But for me, I still think the Wrecking Ball wins and is kind of pretty far ahead still.
I feel like, I mean, Hayley Atwell and Brett Dalton did their own Wrecking Ball. So I feel like the song itself makes them lose.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. No, that's a good point. When you said that you didn't realize it was Lola as well, have you seen the meme that is the headline, the beautiful cinnamon roll, too good for this world, too pure?
Yes.
Danielle, that was you in that moment. That was you.
You know what? I will take it because I've seen people equating that to Sebastian Stan. So if I am being compared to Sebastian Stan, like I am right now in my head, I'm good with it.
Yep. Yep. You beautiful cinnamon roll. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just waiting to see how this escalates from here. Because it's going to escalate and keep escalating. And yeah, the one-upmanship is what I'm really enjoying. But it was cool to see Stan Lee getting involved. I didn't think of all the things that probably crossed my mind of what they could be doing with Dub Smash, I didn't necessarily think that bringing in Stan Lee was going to be one of them. And I don't know why I didn't think of that. But thank goodness for Hayley Atwell thinking about it.
Yes, and have a cameo and everything.
Yes.
Yes, that's very true.
I want him to keep having cameos because I've seen him once or twice, like at conventions and stuff, and it just keeps reminding me how he's getting older. And so I just want to keep seeing him in stuff and ignoring the fact that he's getting older.
Danielle, why would you bring that up?
Because when you see him in person, when he's not doing something,
no,
he just looks so frail. I'm sorry.
I've never had the distinct pleasure of meeting Stan Lee in person, though.
I haven't met him. I've wanted to, but looking on from afar is all I've gotten.
One so day, far. Maybe.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
You know.
Right. So let's move on to movies. There hasn't been a lot of news, really, on the movie side of things. Guess the one thing that we can start off with is James Gunn shared some Guardians of the Galaxy 2 updates. And we may or may not be getting more female characters. Maybe. Hopefully. It was a very non-committal statement on James Gunn's part. Yeah, it was just kind of one of those things where it was like, well, I like female characters and I like them, so maybe you'll get more.
But I also like sausages.
I mean, come on, the Marvel universe in general and everything is kind of one. So, yeah, I don't know. But the other thing is that he was saying there's not going to be any Hulk in Guardians of the Galaxy, which, you know, kind of an understatement. I wasn't necessarily expecting there to be Hulk in Guardians of the Galaxy, so...
Right. If we just haven't gotten to the galactic sort of storylines or details in the other part of the Avengers universe that it was a non-issue.
Yeah. I mean, people like to make, and I was one of them, when Hulk, like, jets off.
Oh, of course,
In the plane at the end, you know, I made the stupid Planet Hulk joke, as did probably a million other people, but I wasn't necessarily being serious about it. It was just a flippant joke. I didn't honestly think that he was going to have shot off to Planet Hulk or anything. It just doesn't make much sense to kind of cross it over yet. I mean, realistically speaking, and James Gunn also said that we shouldn't expect it, but in regards to who would be the best character to cross over it would probably be Captain Marvel, if only because in the comic books right now she's gone galactic and she's kind of been running around with the Guardians of the Galaxy. But yeah, James Gunn has said, like, for the time being, it's important to him that Peter Quill is the sole human Earthling character. So we're not going to see a crossover between the Avengers and the Guardians of the Galaxy. Does that disappoint you, either of you, or are you kind of happy that it's going to stay separate for a little bit longer?
I think it's best separate. Yeah, because we haven't gotten there. I don't want to push something just because it has happened in the comics before. I want, because the movies are their own entity, they're their own storytelling vehicle. We haven't gotten there, and so it doesn't make sense to include these people, I don't think, yet.
Yeah, I imagine there's a plan down the line that will bring them together, because the Thanos thing, like, is a big deal. So getting there eventually seems like it would make sense, but we're not at the stage that it makes sense yet.
Yeah, I think post-Infinity War is going to be most likely in regard to taking the Avengers galactic, or in fact bringing the Guardians of the Galaxy down to Earth for some reason. Like, it's either going to happen during Infinity War or it's going to happen post-Infinity War. I would say the earliest would be Infinity War Part 2, that I would realistically see it working out in any way that makes sense. Right. So, in other Marvel news, Rachel McAdams, who was rumored to potentially be joining the Doctor Strange cast, has now officially joined the Doctor Strange cast. She confirmed it while she was talking to The Wrap at the Toronto International Film Festival. And disclaimer, I love Rachel McAdams as an actress very, very much. I think she's fantastic. Pretty much love everything she's in. Love seeing her in more projects. Doctor Strange continues to have the most problematic casting for me that Marvel has ever done. Period. Because, and I've said it before and I will continue to say it, Doctor Strange's origins in the comics are distinctly Asian in mythology and culturally. And at the moment, there is zero hint that that is going to be upheld or even treated in a respectful way in this adaption. It could be that they're essentially just scrapping the entire background of Doctor Strange and going in a completely different direction. But I'm still very, very worried about this movie. It is so white, it is blinding me. And I'm very, very, very concerned. Very concerned. Because if they do end up going with the Asian magic and mysticism that comes along with the Ancient One, and they've essentially given all of that power to white characters, then they've stepped into territory that's even more problematic than when the comics were originally created, which is a massive step back for me. So, objectively, I love Rachel McAdams as an actress. I think she's fantastic, but this news broke and I still don't know what to think about it. I'm just shaking my head. Just shaking my head. Caitlin, what did you think? Take this story away from me before I just start flipping tables and playing a table flip montage. Because...
I mean, I don't have the background that you do with Doctor Strange, so personally it bothers me less, but what you say, I find that extremely problematic. That, and we don't know what role she's playing, so she could be playing a character in the comics that is white, but even so, you're just adding extra white characters into a cast that does not need to be nearly as white as it is, and that's something that Marvel has dealt with criticism in terms of before, and it is definitely not a good sign that it's something that they're continuing to struggle with in future films. So it definitely does concern me, even though I don't have that familiarity with the property that you do, Danya.
Yeah. The rumor currently is that she is going to be playing Doctor Strange's love interest, Clea. So, yeah. I mean, Clea is a good character for her. Like, if I objectively look at this story and this casting on its own, away from every other casting choice that they've made for Doctor Strange, I would be happy with it. But because it's paired or come after every other casting choice that they've made, I just have white person fatigue for this movie. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like... Yeah, Danielle, what's your thoughts on this? Because I'm just going to
I'll take it away.
Working myself up.
I am in the same camp as Caitlin. Doctor Strange isn't one that I've really delved into yet. I have yet to do my Wikipedia research and all that. But from what you're saying, I think it feels like they are exerting a lot of energy to kind of go against this great framework that has already been laid. I think a lot of criticisms for entertainment come when you're trying to make something diverse or something, I don't know, culturally rich for the sake of it being that way. Like, it's a strained sort of thing. Like, you're kind of forcing it to be that way. But if they start with a story that is already like that, they're kind of bending over backwards to make it not be that way when they could just let it, again, be natural, organic, and have it happen. So I have a problem with that. And again, I don't know a lot about Doctor Strange, but from some of the art that I've seen, it's problematic. And also, I think that exploring, like, Asian mythology, I don't know anything, but if that's what Doctor Strange is kind of into, like, if that's the realm of it, I think that's extremely interesting because that's not something we see very often. So that's disappointing.
Well, I mean, the Ancient One character, which I've kind of gone over on here, I gave a brief history few episodes back, is a Tibetan monk in the comics and is the Sorcerer Supreme prior to Doctor Strange taking it, and his entire basis of power is kind of an Asian mythology and cultural background, as you would expect from a Tibetan monk, and he teaches Doctor Strange everything about mysticism and what he needs to know with his powers in order to take on the mantle of the Sorcerer Supreme. But they've already, like I was saying to another friend of mine who writes for a comic website that focuses on very diverse cultures within comics and what's doing well and what isn't. And I was saying the casting of Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One felt like one step forward and two back, because while it was really interesting that they gender swapped the character, they also stripped away the cultural heritage of the character as well. Like, they whitewashed that character. There's no two ways about it. And that kind of was the last little bit that was, like, warning bells for me. Doctor Strange himself is so ambiguously drawn in the comics that you could either put on top of him that he was a white character, or you could have read him as being a more racially diverse character, because the way that he's drawn is very ambiguous. Like, his features can sometimes be construed as being slightly more on the Asian side, so people would always read him as being an Asian character. So I don't know, there's a lot of stuff about this that I'm very worried about, and until I know a little bit more about the background that they're gonna give it, like, it could be, and I could end up eating my words, it could be that essentially what they're gonna do is just strip away his entire backstory and just start with a brand new version of the character that's solely for the movies. Because at this point, I think that's the only way they're gonna be able to get around the Ancient One problem, because that's the biggest problem for me, is that I don't even necessarily think that they can call her the Ancient One either, because that has such connotations in ancient Asian mythology that, yeah, I don't know. I need more information from this movie, because at the moment I kind of just want to mute every mention of it, because it's just either upsetting me or frustrating me to the point where I just want to close my laptop and just pretend it's not happening anymore. And I was so excited about Doctor Strange when they announced it as a property, because I find him a really fascinating character, because he's very flawed. And in fact, one of my other favorite characters eventually takes over from him as the Sorcerer Supreme. Like, in some point in the Marvel future, they flashed forward and one of my other favorite characters has taken over from him, which, yeah, it's just, I just feel like I'm gonna be disappointed by this, and it was the last thing I wanted, because it's such an interesting property. And the fact that they would have been playing with more magical themes was something I was really looking forward to. But I don't know if I'm alone on that. I don't know if my history with the comics has really, like, really colored my opinion of this, and it's ruining it for me, which sometimes is why it's more difficult going into these movies as a comic fan than it is going into it with no knowledge at all, because sometimes not having the complete basis for it can help you enjoy the movies more. But I think because I know so much of the history, when they change things so drastically from where they originally were, and not in a way that it allows for more inclusion of different races and cultures, one that takes away from a culture that was already defined and hasn't had a lot of representation in either Marvel or movies in general. Like, that's where I start getting worried that Marvel is kind of going a little too far for me. And I want to love this movie so much, because I love Doctor Strange. And I'm ranting. I realize that I've literally gone off on a massive rant, but I'm kind of just so worried about this movie at this point, and I don't know how they can bring it back on track for me. Right. I'll move on to slightly happier news, which is there's a report that Rebecca Ferguson from the new Mission Impossible movie is being eyed for Captain Marvel. And I am slightly more enthused by this casting rumor than I was with the one from last week. So, what do you guys think? If Rebecca Ferguson lands the part of Captain Marvel, would you be happy?
I haven't seen the new Mission Impossible, so I have zero opinion.
I'm with Caitlin. I have no idea who this girl is. Honestly, this woman, I just want a Captain Marvel. Like, I want, at this point, we've been kind of going round and round trying to figure out who it's going to be, hearing all these casting rumors. I just want one person to kind of look at and said, yes, that's my Captain Marvel. before everything even starts. Like, I'm just getting really impatient because I really like Captain Marvel, and I just want that face, that cinematic universe face now to go along with the name. I'm tired of the rumors.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that we got was Emily Blunt has basically gone, I haven't even been approached by Marvel. I don't even know who Captain Marvel is, which I don't know if that's like her throwing people off the scent or if she's being completely truthful, because no one ever admits to having landed a Marvel role. Ever. They all try to throw you off the scent. They all pretend that they haven't got any idea of what's going on and what's a Marvel. Like, but I don't know. I kind of would be into her being Captain Marvel, but like my ultimate choice is still Katie Sackhoff. Like, I still think she'd be such a good Carol Danvers. And if not her, Catherine Winnick would be pretty good from Vikings, I think. And if they wanted to do something completely different, Gina Torres, I think, would be an interesting choice. But
Gina Torres.
Yeah. She can't be Gina Wonder Torres. Woman.
Yeah, I was going to say, Gina Torres originally was one of my choices for who I would have loved to have played Wonder Woman. And then obviously when she didn't get that role, I kind of started thinking, well, you know what? She could also kind of work as Captain Marvel. That would be really cool. So, yeah, there's so many really awesome ladies that I think could be Carol Danvers. But I'm with Danielle. At this point, I want to know who it is so that we can move past the speculation, because I just keep going back and forth on so many people that would be so great for the role that I just want one, please. But where some people may be gaining things, others have lost them. Gambit has lost its director, Rupert Wyatt. So that's a little minor setback.
Slightly.
We kind of aren't having... Yeah, we can't... We're kind of not having much luck with the Gambit adaption, because, you know, there was the rumors that Channing Tatum was going to drop out, and then he didn't drop out, and then we just started getting more casting news, and now they've lost their director. So I kind of keep hoping that this movie is still going to happen and come out, but at every turn something else is going wrong with it that makes me a little bit more worried. So
please don't be another Fantastic Four.
Yeah, oh god, I did go and see Fantastic Four, by the way. I did.
Oh, done. Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. I want to, sort of.
The first three quarters of the movie were actually pretty decent. Like, it wasn't as bad as a lot of people made out. The first three quarters of that movie set up some really interesting stuff. The last quarter of the movie was ridiculously rushed and made, like, no sense, and was kind of the part that you come out remembering. And I think that's where it's colored a lot of people's views. I think it was just a very confused movie in general. I think between Josh Trank and then Fox kind of fighting over the direction that it should go in, I think a lot of the issues probably came from post-production and cutting the movie together. Like, I don't think it was done in the best possible way. I just don't think it was necessarily as bad as everyone's been making it out to be. I certainly didn't think. I don't think it was the worst superhero movie that there's ever been. Like, Wolverine Origins, for me, is still pretty bad. You know, the Elektra movie, the original Daredevil movie. Like, the Catwoman movie. Like, there are other superhero movies that I think are much, much worse than this one's been getting the slating for. Like, I don't think it was as bad as as everyone was saying. But I did do it in a back-to-back double feature where I did Fantastic Four and then Hawkeye movie. I mean, Mission Impossible. and Mission Impossible was phenomenal. Like, I enjoyed that so much. So much. And not just because I was pretending it was an undercover Hawkeye movie.
Of course not. Never crossed your mind.
Of course not. Never. Not even once. But yeah, verdict. Fantastic Four. Not amazing. Not as bad as everyone was making out. But still not even rating up there with most of the superhero movies. Mission Impossible 5, amazing. Everyone should go and see it, especially if Rebecca Ferguson ends up getting the Captain Marvel role, because it's a really good judge of her as an actress. Like, Mission Impossible 5 is essentially all about her, much in the way that Mad Max was all about Furiosa. So, yeah.
Good to know.
Yes, that's it for Marvel movie news.
So, moving on to some DC movie news. I hope you guys like Batman, because there's going to be lots of Batman. There was a rumor going around that Ben Affleck's Batman was so awesome that he was just going to be everywhere, that he's blowing Henry Cavill's Superman right off the screen, so that they're wanting more Batman in Batman v Superman and more Batman everywhere. And update to the story is Zack Snyder has confirmed that there will be more Batman, but not necessarily because he's blowing Henry Cavill off the screen. He says that only in that because it's a different Batman than the Batman that was in the Chris Nolan movie. So we have a little bit more explaining to do, and you just had a whole Superman movie. But I think that only in that way, because you need to understand where Batman is with everything, and that's more toward the beginning, but it evens back out as it goes. So he says. So we will see.
He's like, yo, dog, I heard you like Batman. So
you get a Batman.
Yeah, it's Batman v. Batman. I'm Batman.
Dawn of Batman.
Batman. Yeah, I mean, I still kind of want the balance to be pretty even between the two characters. I mean, they're both in the billing of this movie. They are both in the title of the movie. If we don't at least get even billing within the film itself, I'm going to be slightly disappointed, because there's a way, even if Ben Affleck's Batman is far and above Henry Cavill's Superman, whatever, it's still a movie that should be evenly split between the two of them. And you can still, if you are a good director and a good writer, then there is still a way where you can split the screen time 50-50 between these two characters and still have a really good introduction and set up the motivations for Batman without having to reduce the screen time for other characters. Personal opinion.
I'm not sure I trust Snyder that much, but we will see.
Snyder has been saying some stuff that's kind of made me want to hit my head on a desk repeatedly. I don't know. Sometimes he puts his foot in his mouth a lot when he's doing interviews. So, yeah. I guess we'll see. But that takes us on to quotes of the week. So how about we start with Danielle, who is our guest. Let's let our guest go first.
Be our guest.
Oh, you're too kind. Now that song's going to be stuck in my head. Good.
You're welcome.
So thank you. I appreciate it. My quote actually comes from, there's an issue, or actually a series that is starting to come out. It's called Captain America White. And basically, one of our writers from Hyperbole, Brooke, said it best. It's pretty much like a love letter to Bucky. It's really good. If you're a fan of Captain America, you should really pick it up. And so my quote is from Captain America within this comic book. And he says, "It's a terrible thing to have to learn that sometimes you don't get to say everything you need. Excuse me. That sometimes you don't get to say everything you need to before someone you love dies." and that's Captain America talking, of course, about Bucky.
Yeah, Captain America White was like a train wreck of emotions. Forget the steamroller.
I've picked up a few Captain Americas, and he's my favorite all the time. Some are hit and miss, but this one was just, it's just beautiful. Like, the art is beautiful. The writing is beautiful. It's fantastic.
I was incredibly impressed. I picked that up as well when it was released, and it's just, it's really good. It's really, really good. If you guys want a Captain America recommendation, pick up Captain America White. It was, yeah, there's no describing it. You have to experience it for yourself. That one single quote from Danielle is just a small, small piece of it. So go out, go buy it. Buy it on Amazon, buy it at your local comic store, wherever you need to.
It just came out like this 2 days ago, so you're going to find it. It's going to be, it's pretty front and center, I think, in a lot of comic book shops. Mine had it just right there in the front saying, buy me. So I did. So you'll find it easily.
Caitlin, how about yours?
So I'm going to elevate the mood a little bit after that. Mine comes from the Flash trailer, and it's a moment where in Star Labs you see Lisa Snart and Cisco, and we know that they've got some romantic tension going on. So Lisa Snart says, "I always did like a man who could handle a gun," and Cisco says, "You should see my Nerf collection." I love him so much. I can't wait to have more Cisco in my life.
To be honest,
I've missed Cisco.
That probably would have been my quote if you hadn't have taken it first. So it's so good. It's so good. I literally laughed out loud when I was watching that trailer, which for me is something that never happens. So wonderful. Great pick.
I rewatched the Flash trailer before we started recording the episode, and I'd already connected a call with Caitlin to just, like, sometimes we just chat before we start recording, and I started playing it, and I laughed. I was like, oh, Cisco baby.
Oh, just a few more weeks that he's back in our lives.
I know, so exciting. My quote of the week is from an interview that Sebastian Stan did that started making the rounds on social media today. So it's in response to some of Zack Snyder's comments about, I guess, Marvel being like cookie-cutter movie kind of things and not doing anything interesting or different, and how he's doing amazingly different things with the superhero genre. And Sebastian Stan reacted to it, and it was just, as I was reading through it, I was like kind of going, oh god, this is just gonna, it's gonna keep going back and forth, and it's gonna be DC versus Marvel, and people are gonna get like really angry at each other, and we're gonna have both camps going back and forth. There was one line that he said that I was just like, oh damn, throw down, biggest burn ever. And he basically said of Zack Snyder's movies, in particular on DC side, that they're not trying to mimic a better Christopher Nolan movie or something like that. And I just, out loud, I just went, oh, damn. Seb Stan. That was nasty. Hilarious, but nasty.
Shots fired.
And not necessarily. Yeah, shots fired. Yeah. It was definitely a shots fired moment. I just, yeah, I'm still, I only saw that quote today as well. And I was going to pick something else, and I was like, nope, got to put that one in. Right. Comic Corner, guys. So this was inspired by an article that Danielle did, that I got to contribute to, which was all about female-led comics that are awesome and currently ongoing. And I know a couple of people in the comments brought up the point that there wasn't a lot of Wonder Woman. She did feature in the DC Bombshells recommendation that Danielle made, but her solo title, which is the New 52 one didn't make the list. From a personal standpoint, the current ongoing New 52 Wonder Woman isn't as strong as when it first launched and some of her other stuff. So, this comic corner is dedicated to Wonder Woman and a lot of her titles that I really, really loved. AKA, this was probably harder than my Captain America recommendations list to narrow down. So there are also a couple of honorable mentions at the end. So, first one I've got is The Wonder Woman Chronicles Volume 1. So Wonder Woman Chronicles does exactly what it says on the cover. It chronicles Wonder Woman's origin story. So much like Captain America, Wonder Woman was introduced during World War II and quickly went to battle against the Nazis. William Moulton Marston intended for Wonder Woman to not just be an equal to Batman and Superman, but to be an icon for female empowerment. Boy, did they succeed with her. Next one I've got is Wonder Woman Down to Earth. Greg Rucka has penned some of my favorite Wonder Woman stories and always features heavily on my recommendations for her. Down to Earth is the first of six of Rucka's collections, and they're all as fantastic as each other and worth each and every penny. Down to Earth sees Wonder Woman acting as an ambassador for her people and takes on a decidedly political tone. Wonder Woman publishes a book of her ideals and essays, and it becomes slightly controversial. Of course, it culminates in a huge superhero versus villain showdown, but it's in the nuanced writing that this trade really shines. Next one I've got is Justice League of America, League of One. And don't let the Justice League tagline fool you, this is undoubtedly a Wonder Woman story. It centers around Wonder Woman's vision of the future, in which she sees all of the members of the Justice League perish whilst coming up against a monster in Europe. So in order to stop this from happening, she has to take on each member of the League one-on-one so she can go on to face the monster alone. And it really highlights just how capable Wonder Woman is in matching wits and strength against the best of the best of the League, and that she's not someone to be trifled with. Next one I've got is Wonder Woman the Hecatia, which I never know how to pronounce this because I don't speak Greek. So, but this is another Greg Rucka pen trade, but this one focuses more heavily on the mythology behind Wonder Woman. So when a woman enters her care, Wonder Woman struggles against her more traditional rituals and her modern ideals to protect her. It also sees her come up against Batman and the Furies, and is a perfectly balanced tale that's a must-have for any Wonder Woman collection. And the last one I've got is Wonder Woman Gods and Mortals. So George Perez's run on Wonder Woman is critically acclaimed, and for good reason. He bridged the mythological and modern Princess Diana with a nuanced and deft hand. This trade sees Wonder Woman's first foray into man's world, and how she adjusts to live amongst them, but also asks some pretty existential questions about religion and gods that you tend to ponder long after you've closed the book. My honourable mentions are Wonder Woman Spirit of Truth, Wonder Woman The Circle, Wonder Woman Sensation Comics, which is digital only, and Wonder Woman New 52, but this is specifically Azzarello and Chang's run. So, yeah, those are all my Wonder Woman recommendations, guys.
I'm really glad you did those, because I did see those comments at the end of my article as well, and I did feel bad that I don't have a basis in Wonder Woman and that she wasn't included. And I mean, I'm not reading her right now, so she couldn't have been included, but I'm really glad you did this one. I have to pick up some of these.
Yeah, they're really worth it. Yeah, all of them are really, really good. In fact, a lot of them are old enough that you would probably be able to find them at the library.
Yes, you know me so well.
I do know you so well. Right, let's move into some feedback. And guys, you were super chatty this week. It was fantastic. Hooray! You had a lot to say to us. Yeah, no, it was great. So our first bit of feedback is from George, who said, great show. It would be great if you also acknowledged the millions of dollars Stephen Amell continues to raise for charity. I wish more people picked up on that. So this is off us talking about Dub Smash Wars, and I guess talking a little bit about how the Marvel cast have kind of moved what was something like a silly little San Diego Comic-Con thing into raising money for charity. Stephen Amell's Sincerously stuff is fantastic as well.
I have a Sincerously shirt, so totally
acknowledge it. I also have a Sincerously. Yeah, I have a Sincerously shirt. And in fact, while I am at New York Comic Con, I will be attending the Team Arrow NYC Sin Serious Arrow premiere party on the Thursday. So all of that money goes to charity for the entry on the door, which is $10. I think I paid for my ticket, and they have other bits and pieces that they're doing in honor of Stephen Amell's Sincerously charity work. So, yeah, I'm really excited to go to that because it'll be really, really fun to see the Arrow premiere with a load of other fans and also donating money to charity at the same time. Yay! So I'm super excited about that. Caitlin, do you want to get the next comment?
Sophia Malik says, I saw a theory somewhere that the reason Scarlet Witch isn't in the Civil War team photos is because she somehow loses control of her powers and causes an accident. This could take the place of the Stamford incident in the comics as the trigger for the launch of the Superhuman Registration Act in the Civil War. They could also tie into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., since by then the tarragon fish oil supplements should have Inhumans with powers popping up all over the place and Inhumans could be required to register. So that is an interesting theory we were talking about. It seemed odd that Scarlet Witch was missing from the promo images.
Yes. Yes, we did. And there's a really interesting thing from Age of Ultron in the commentary that Joss Whedon points out. And I will give him kudos for this, because the rip in the shield, when Tony has his vision, his Scarlet Witch vision, where the shield has been literally snapped into when all the Avengers are dead pretty much, is the shape of the way that the shield has been damaged is exactly the same as the rip in Ultron's chest cavity after Scarlet Witch kind of rips his body open. It's exactly the same kind of pattern. And he kind of said in the commentary that it was a very purposeful thing that they did, because they were Scarlet Witch's powers, she's very, very powerful, and that's great until it isn't. And I thought that was a really interesting part of the DVD commentary for me, because it just shows that she's an incredibly powerful asset, but she could also equally be the cause of a lot of major destruction, if her powers go out of control, which in the comics they have two very disastrous effects. So there is some weight to that potential theory. So, yeah. And the Stamford incident, for anyone who's wondering what that is basically a small-time superhero team messes up big time and causes a massive disaster that is the trigger. It's basically the straw that broke the camel's back kind of trigger for Civil War and the Superhero Registration Act. And it's called the Stamford Incident. In case anyone wasn't too up on their Civil War backstory and was wondering what that was referencing. Danielle, do you want to read Amalia's comment?
I would love to. Amalia says, I've been thinking about the Civil War lineup you discussed. I know you've previously talked about how Steve and Tony's breakup will not have enough of an impact because they're not good enough friends yet. What if they put Black Widow at the center of the story? Of all the characters you mentioned on Tony's side, she's the one who has the strongest bond with Steve. There is also the matter of her BFF Hawkeye joining Cap. How will that affect their relationship? I hope they seriously explore Natasha's role in all this, especially after the disaster that was her Age of Ultron storyline, which I'm still pretending doesn't exist, by the way. Me too, Amalia. Not talking about it. I don't think about it. It yeah. did never happen.
I will put my hands up and say I hadn't necessarily thought that Natasha's loyalties may or may not have been the thing that would divide them. Like, I hadn't thought about that before, but now that you've mentioned it,
that would be cool.
That actually makes a lot of sense. Amalia. Amalia, Amalia, Amalia. You're blowing my mind. Right. Some other feedback that we got. So Kay, who is at KayWright on Twitter, said, "You should talk about hero costumes to inspire us for Halloween."
Yeah.
I love Halloween.
Yeah.
I love Halloween a lot. The only thing I love more than Halloween is costumes. But do you know what? Maybe for an episode that is slightly closer to Halloween itself, we could run down some of our favorite costumes maybe that we've seen. Or what we're dressing up as for Halloween.
Yeah.
That would be a really cool thing to do for a Halloween-ish themed episode. What do you think?
That sounds like so it. Fun.
Yes, let's do it. Because then we can dedicate a little bit more time to this and talk about some of the awesome costumes that we've seen around and about.
Yeah, and costumes are the best. And dressing up like superheroes yeah. is the best. So, yes.
Yes. Definitely. Caitlin, do you want to take next?
Sure. Brittany Koza, who's at Britt L. Koza, says, "Just rewatch Static Shock again, and I need some more in my life. Any recs? Hashtag Virgil takes central."
Brittany, you have good taste. Static Shock is awesome. And I will add that to my list of things to recommend stuff for. So it will be put on the list. I don't know when we'll get to it, but keep listening and it will definitely pop up at some point. Danielle, do you want to get Danny's comment?
Yeah.
Danielle, meet Danny. Yeah. Danny, this is Danielle.
Hello, yes. And I actually relate to this a lot. So Danny says, "Comics question. I'm excited for the big Marvel relaunch because of all the new entry points, but there's no way I'll be able to afford to follow all the series I want to follow. In your opinion, what are the must-read series of this relaunch? Do you have any tips or tricks for following lots of comic series on a budget? Thanks, Danya."
This one was such a loaded question. I've been thinking about it for the last couple of days because in the grand scheme of things, with the post-Battle World and Secret Wars storyline, there are about 45 unique titles that are part of the all-new, all-different lineup of what's happened post-Battle World. I'm still trying to figure out for myself which ones are the best ones to start off with. I will say that I'm really enjoying the all-new, all-different, like, Hawkeye and the all-new, all-different Avengers. Like, they're really, really good. I'm really enjoying those a lot. But I think it's a little bit too soon for me to call it in regard to, like, which ones are the best entry points and which ones are the ones that should be followed at the expense of some of the others. But the tips and tricks for following lots of comic series on a budget, I would point you in the direction of Danielle. Go to your local library. Your local library, if they don't have the comic books in, they can usually order stuff in from other libraries that they're, like, affiliated with. Or at least that's how it works in the UK.
Yeah.
Maybe Danielle, as someone who reads a lot of comics via her library, would probably be able to give you a little bit more advice about this from an American library standpoint, because I don't know if British libraries work slightly differently or not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have even the smaller libraries, like mine's a relatively small library, but we're building up our comic selection. So I would definitely hit up your library. The only, I guess, downfall of using your library is that they get the trades. which I love trades, but they come out a few months late. So if you're unsure about a title, I would maybe try to wait it out, read the first trade if you get it from your library, and then if you really like it, perhaps go to your local comic book shop, and sometimes they'll have back issues of things depending on how popular they are, how big your store is, and they'll be able to help you. Usually after like one trade comes out, they're not too far ahead with the singular issues, so they should be able to help you out with getting you up to speed. That's kind of what I'm doing currently. Like, I'm kind of waiting on the trades for Spider-Gwen because I didn't catch it right away, as well as Silk. And then going from there, moving forward, they're going to start with the new Marvel relaunch. And so if I like those trades, I'm going to jump on those issues, if that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes... I think that makes sense. It made sense to me. But the other thing is that if you want to read a lot of Marvel stuff, particularly in bulk, the Marvel Unlimited subscription, if you don't mind too much reading your comics digitally rather than owning them in a physical format, and you don't mind the slight delay in regard to it being a couple of months later, then I guess people are getting them, like, if you can afford to buy a lot of them in one go. It's actually a really good subscription. It's very worth the money, especially if you are reading primarily Marvel titles. So I would definitely give that a look if the library route doesn't look like it'll work out for you. I mean, I do a lot of buying comics, and sometimes I'll like sell them on once I've read them if I don't necessarily want to keep them or I didn't particularly enjoy them. But I read a lot of comics. Like, I've got boxes and boxes of them under my bed, but I've got a monthly budget. I've got like spreadsheets of like my incomings and outgoings, and I specifically have a comic budget per month, and it would probably horrify a lot of people how much money I spend on comics per month. And I do recoup a lot of that by selling some of them on, but I fully understand that that's not something that everyone can do. I just am in a fortunate place where I do have enough disposable income to get away with it at the moment. It may not always be the case, but I think the library route is a very, very good one, especially if you're on a budget.
Yeah, and libraries, they know that people want comic books now. Like, that's the big thing. And so they're trying to buy as many as possible. A good example of this is this past week we got that teaser for Jessica Jones. And this week or last week, I can't keep track of time. And I immediately went to my library website because I knew a bunch of other people were going to do the same thing. And as soon as I went to the website, it showed that they had just put it on order for the giant, it's called Alias. It's one of like the best runs of it. And it's the entire collection of Alias. They just put it on order because they knew that people were going to come to them for it. So I would take advantage of the library. Otherwise, the other thing that I do, that I forgot to mention is I just do a bunch of research, you know, kind of what you like. And so if you kind of research into where these titles may be going, that could help you narrow it down. I know you've probably already done a little bit of it, but you know what you like, kind of stick to what you like. You'll be able to pick up things about the universe from other places. Don't follow a series just because it's like maybe a must read because it's really important. Just go with what you like.
There is a really good website called comicbookroundup.com, and basically it collects all of the comic books that are out from everyone, from main publishers to indie publishers. And what you can do is you can search a title in their little search bar, or if you are like, if you're specifically looking for something, and it will give you a score based on critics' reviews, and it basically collects a load of reviews that people have done on loads of different websites. Think of it like Goodreads for just comics. But it's all critic-based reviews rather than user reviews. So, and it gives it like a score as well. So you can kind of gauge which ones are really critically acclaimed and which ones aren't doing so well. And it has color-coded score ratings as well, from like green to red. Obviously green being better, red being worse. And usually on the front page, it'll put on like a little thing right at the top, like new comics. So anything that's come out that's new that week, it usually has them all in a list. And it's really, really good for if you kind of like the thought of a comic, but you're not sure you want to jump straight in, you can read what, you can basically find all of the reviews for it in one place, which is a good way of deciding whether or not you want to spend your money on it. So that's another way of judging what you want to spend your money on. let's see. We've got another comment now, which is from Jeanette Gutierrez, who says about the Arrow trailer, because we asked a couple of you what you thought. All I have to say is Elicity, and also Felicity the Badass. Love it. And October can't get here quicker. So... yes. And then we'll breeze through these last ones because they're ones that I wanted to address. So, Hen again, I want to say thank you for picking up so many of my Comic Corner recommendations. I've been retweeting some of the photos Hen has been posting, but she's literally been going out and buying some of the trades that I've been recommending. And I'm just so happy to see... like people going out and reading more comics and enjoying them. So if you have picked up anything from the Comic Corner recommendations and you've enjoyed them, please let me know. I love seeing you guys enjoying comics. It just makes me really, really happy. And the last little thing, I guess, is we asked you, did you want us to go weekly? Did you want to hear more of our voices? And we pretty much got a resounding yes from everyone.
Amazing.
So I think, yeah, so I think yes. When shows, when all the shows come back on the air, I think we'll go weekly. So, gosh, that's going to be really soon. So we'll plan for that. We'll be ready, and we'll maybe adjust the format a little bit to accommodate for the fact that we'll be talking about a lot of shows, so we may do like an episode recap or review section around our TV section. So, yeah, looks like we're going weekly, guys.
Oh my goodness.
Hooray!
A lot more editing for me.
A lot more listening for me.
Yes, yes. Cool. Caitlin, do you want to get last week's question of the week?
Sure. So last week we asked, what song would you like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter cast to dub smash next? And I suggested a Backstreet Boys song because they're great. And Janet Gutierrez says she fully supports the idea of a BSB song for the dub smash wars. That would just be amazing. And I concur.
Yep. Do you have one, Danielle?
Oh, gosh.
On the spot.
I know. What would I... Uptown Funk? Would that be fun? Maybe? I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there now. I don't know. I think... let's go with Uptown Funk. I think it'd be fun to see them, like, dancing. Or, like, Too Hot.
Yeah.
Hot Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have a thing for that song. Yeah. Especially when you add Hawks to
of
it.
Of course. I mean, obviously.
Danielle.
Danya.
As our guest, would you like to ask this week's question of the week?
Yes. If you could add Batman to any movie, which one would have hashtag more Batman?
Answers on a postcard, guys. But only as long as you draw Batman to go with it. Yeah, let us know on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast, or if you want to talk about absolutely anything, we will read all of your tweets as well. You can leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypable.com. Or again, feel free to drop us an email. We do read every single one. You can get hold of us at herohypepodcast@gmail.com. But that's it for another 2 weeks. We will be back soon. And again, I know this has gone a little bit long, but hopefully when we go weekly, we will be able to adjust for content and news. But there were 3 trailers and a lot of emotions this week.
And Danya needed to rant.
I did need to rant again. I'm so sorry, guys, because I think I don't have enough of an outlet. There's no one else in my life, in real life, that wants to talk about this stuff with me. You guys are my only outlet for this. Single tear.
We're here.
But yeah. But guys, until next time, I'm Danya.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danielle.
See you next time, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Sure. Sorry if you hear my dog squeaking a toy. Yeah, there it goes. Okay.
I love it.
Puppy.
Oh, he's really desperate for attention. Okay. Aww. So, Sophia Malik says, I saw a theory somewhere that the... Maybe someone else should get this one. Okay, do that. Thank you. I took his toy. Okay.
Poor puppy.
I'll give it to you later, I promise. Don't give me that look.